The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clare for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clare. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Clare.
And this is Stan Clare, and I have with me Natalie Solomon, who's now become the producer, managed to inveigle his way in. And I see in England the women are moving aside there because they're being bullied. And this is kind of the reverse. No, not really. She's actually a very sweet lady. And also have Tabo in the studio, who's looking after the buttons and the red lights and making sure everything runs smoothly. And we're crossing to Wayne Green, who is the CEO of the Jewish Teen Funders Network he's in New York. And hi, Wayne.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show today.
So, Wayne, I don't have much of a CV except that you come from a space which is very good, which is excellent, that you started out in South Africa. And then you went and exported yourself to all over the world to bring the message that South Africans are great people, good at rugby, et cetera, et cetera. So, give us your rundown of yourself.
Hi Natalie. It's Hello. So nice to be on the show with you. Natalie and I actually were at school together, so it's really lovely that we have this opportunity to kind of collaborate here today.
Who was the teacher? Which one of you was the teacher?
So yes, I was born in South Africa, in Johannesburg, and went to King David School, and then early on in high school moved to live in Perth with my family, and then was in Perth for a number of years, studied there, went and did a gap year in Israel, and then had the opportunity to move to Melbourne for a couple of years. Then I moved to London for 5 years, and then was back in Melbourne for 10 years. And then I moved to New York in early 2017. So I've been here just over 2.5 years.
So before we get to what you're actually doing now, just tell us how you got to this point. What was the lead up to bring you to a point? And we'll talk about the Jewish Teen Funders Network in a moment. But give us some background of why you're there, what led you to this point, what did you do before this?
Sure. So prior to coming to New York, I was the director of operations for a not-for-profit in Australia that worked to provide social and affordable housing and community services across Melbourne and Adelaide. And I was doing that full-time. I also had been working at a men's clinic doing some work around HIV testing, counseling, and prevention within the LGBT community, and had also started up an organization called JAG, which stands for Jewish and Gay, which was really about inclusion for LGBT Jews within the wider Jewish community and Jewish organizations. Back in 2013, I actually came out to New York with the opportunity to see about trying to live here, and came for 3 months and it didn't work. So I went back to Australia and then did the work that I just mentioned. And then in late 2016, I actually got a scholarship from the Australian government called Endeavour Executive Fellowship, which sends Australians to different parts of the world to do work in research, professional development. And I was working with an organization here in New York for 4 months called the Ali Forney Center, which is a specific organization and one of the largest in the country here in the U.S., which really supports housing and community services for LGBT youth who have been kicked out of home or been disenfranchised because of their LGBT identity. And I was brought into the organization to do a specific review about how to increase and improve services and how to think strategically about how you tailor programming to a particular cohort of client. And I knew in taking that opportunity and that fellowship that I wanted to live in New York, so I had quit my job to take the fellowship, and then was networking and was really fortunate to find a role here in New York with the Jewish Teen Funders Network. And when I was looking for something in terms of my next career move, it was very intentional that I wanted to work with the Jewish organization and work in a space that aligned to my values and my commitment in terms of my love and affection for the Jewish community and how I can impact that in this space.
So I just want to ask Natalie a question along the lines of you. So Natalie, was he a good student, a good chap at school?
He was a great
What are your memories?
He was a great chap, lots of fun.
Okay, so he's well suited to the Jewish Teen Funders Network.
Exactly.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about the Jewish Teen Funders Network.
Please.
Sure. So the Jewish Teen Funders Network is an organization based here in New York. We are a network organization, so we support teen philanthropy programs that exist throughout North America, which includes the U.S. and Canada. We have programs in Israel and in Australia. The organization sits within the larger organization of the Jewish Funders Network, which is a membership-based organization, which is an organization that supports philanthropists, foundations that give money to a range of different initiatives and programs throughout the world. And they're the umbrella body based here. So our organization sits within that. We have over 100 teen philanthropy programs that exist within our network. And on average, we estimate about just over 2,000 teenagers who participate in the program. It is a program where teens learn about what Jewish values are in giving, the importance that we have and the commitment that we have as Jews to give. And what does that mean in terms of who we are as individuals and how do we give collectively? The teens then work through a program over an academic year where they really learn about what their Jewish values are. They self-select values that align to the group that's together. And then they think about issue areas that they want to address, whether it's mental health or poverty or drug and alcohol. And they then decide to focus on that particular issue. They then learn about what issues are being tackled in their local community, what is the Jewish response to these issues, and how do we address them. The teens then create requests for proposals to organizations that are addressing these issues. They send them out, and then organizations can actually then apply back to the teens for funding. So in some groups...
For specific projects, in other words. In other words, the funding is for projects within those spaces.
Correct, absolutely. The projects really range. And the funding that is available also range is really varied. So here in New York, there is a very large Jewish community, and as such, there's a very large teen philanthropy program that exists here. And they raise, on average, over $250,000 a year, which they then grant out to a number of programs here in New York. They may grant out nationally as well as to Israel. And then there's some other smaller programs. So there's a new program that just started up in Indianapolis and Seattle. And so they have a smaller pool of funds that they grant out. But it's really about the teens learning about the commitment that we have to give. And what is the opportunities for us to give collectively? And there's a lot of giving circles that exist here in the U.S. And this is really a model that encourages teens to work in a giving circle modality. And how can they affect change by pooling their funds together to make a larger impact? Last year we did a study to understand, the amount and where the teens were giving. We had a response rate of about 66% of the programs responding, and we have had over $1 million allocated by teens to different non-for-profits.
Oh, that's amazing.
And of those non-for-profits, 62% of the dollars raised actually went to Jewish causes. So that was programs in Israel. It went to Jewish organizations that are supporting Jewish initiatives, as well as organizations that are serving wider than the Jewish community.
So, I mean, I'm putting myself in a position of a student or a scholar, whatever we would call ourselves, a learner in South Africa. And, all I want to do is have fun. Why do I want to go out and get involved in all of this, in the sort of the sad part of life and running around doing hard work to raise money for everybody? What drives me to that point? How do you pull me into the program?
Well, I think that the programs are fun. I think that there is an opportunity for teens to come together. You know, the programs are pluralistic in nature. So a lot of the programs focus on bringing teens together that come from a real diverse range of backgrounds. So they come from teens who are reform, conservative, egalitarian, orthodox, teens that come from different geographic locations in the community, teens that are unaffiliated with the wider community, as well as teens that just self-identify as Jewish, where they come from a family of one parent who's Jewish and one who's not. So the teens really have an opportunity in each of the sessions to really collaborate with one another and build new relationships and have fun in learning about this serious topic. And, you know, teens, you know, I can speak for the teens that we work with here in the U.S., you know, and a little bit wider, that, you know, these teens today that we work with have a real sense about how can they affect change, where is their space in the world, and how can they make an impact in improving the situation, in fighting injustices. And so this program is really tailored to those teens that want to make a commitment. You know, teens have an opportunity to do volunteering, but through the programs that we provide, it is their chance that they can actually understand, like, how does philanthropy make a significant impact in these different issue areas that they select. And because the program is really directed by the teens, they're the ones that have the money. They're the ones that make the decisions. They're the ones that say, we want to address gun violence. We want to address the issues that are impacting immigration and the refugee crisis and issues at the border. This is a real chance for them to get a hands-on approach to addressing these issues.
So is it by application or is there a selection process to be part of this?
Yeah, so, you know, each program works individually. So as I said, you know, we have over 100 programs and they exist throughout the country. And each program has a slight variation on how they have the teens get into the program. So the teens often apply to get in. Some of the programs sort of cap it. I know in Detroit, they have two sets of cohorts, so it's about 25 teens in each program, and that's the number that they will take each year. And so the teens apply and get interviewed. But in other smaller communities, you know, they still do apply because it is about the teens, you know, articulating what it is that they want to get out of the program. Why is it that they feel that they want to address a particular issue? And so it is then also an opportunity for the facilitator or the program director to meet with the teens to ensure that the teens are allocated into the various groups that will match the opportunities for age or the opportunities to network and build new relationships.
Now, these clubs, or what do you call each little group? Is
often they kind of refer to as like teen boards or teen, you know, they're not independent foundations, but it's a teen foundation. So it's a group of teens essentially acting as a board like any other large entity where the teens are able to have funds and allocate it out.
Are they competing with each other in any way or?
No, but I did have a request once to see whether we wanted to start a competition with the teens, but it's not something that we've sort of pursued right now. But, you know, it isn't a competition. It is about the teens really thinking about, how do I have an impact with the funds that we have?
How do they find a way of working together so that kind of natural hierarchies or so that these team strategies can be put into place so it's not just a mess and everybody talking at once?
Sure. So, you know, the program is run by a facilitator. The programs are often housed in Jewish community centers. I don't actually remember back in South Africa if we have what we call sort of JCCs, the Jewish community centers here. There is federations here, that there's foundations, schools, synagogues. So the teams come together and they're led by a facilitator. And that facilitator is skilled to ensure that the teens work collaboratively. We work primarily through a process of consensus building, where the teens really learn to articulate and advocate for issue areas or things that they want to address. And it's really about learning how to have respectful dialogue with one another. And that is a fundamental process that the teens learn throughout the program. And I think it's a skill that is critical in all different stages of life. And so these programs are about how we learn the skills for giving, for philanthropy, what is the lifelong opportunities that we have in this space to give in other areas, you know, and this ability to really think about when we have differences, how do we talk and respect one another's opinions to come to a unanimous decision on where funds may get allocated or what the issue area may be, you know, and sometimes there might be a team that wants to address drug and alcohol, but the collective decision is made to address, you know, domestic violence. You know, all issue areas are important, and so it's about ensuring that they understand that all work is good work. But sometimes we don't always get our way, and so it's about through that consensus building that they really learn about how to move forward as a group.
How vast is this network? I mean, is it solely an American thing? Is it New York, or is it worldwide?
No, so it is worldwide. So, you know, we have a program, we have what's called the Foundation Board Incubator. These are 10 communities that the Jewish Teen Funders Network have supported, through, our funders, which is Maimonides Fund and Laura Lauder. And they have given funds for us to work with 10 communities. So we have a program in Australia, we have in Israel, one in Canada, and the remaining 7 are here in the US. And these are programs that we've actually gone to work in collaboration with an organization. We provided funding to incubate them over a 3 to 5 year period. And we work very closely with them to start these programs so that when we step away with the funding, we continue to provide that support, curriculum and training to the professionals to be able to undertake these programs.
So why do you leave South Africa out of it?
Say that again.
Why do you leave South Africa out of it?
So we don't leave South Africa out of it. We, you know, I think it's a great opportunity that you've invited me to the show, and it's hopefully there's someone who's listening that thinks, oh my God, this is an amazing program. Let's bring it here to South Africa. And you know, that's absolutely what we are hoping to do. We are looking to see what other communities are interested in bringing teen philanthropy to Jewish teens in their communities. You know, I know that we've had some dialogue with different individuals over a number of years with regards to the potential for South Africa. Just unfortunately, it hasn't been aligned, but we absolutely would love to think about how can we bring this program to South Africa? How do we ensure that the teens learn about the ability for them to affect change in South Africa through the use of philanthropy?
Isn't Natalie, you would be better placed to answer the question, but in South Africa, I think there's a program within each of the schools, particularly the Jewish day schools, where this is what kids have to go through. So at some point in their school career, they do get involved in philanthropic activities. I don't know whether they get credits for it or whether they just are involved, but it certainly falls under the ambit of the school system.
I don't know if it's as organized in terms of an organized philanthropic as much as it is just joining and doing Gemilut Hasidim or just being, you know, joining programs that are already created. It sounds like your kids actually come up with an idea from beginning to follow through to follow up. Am I right?
Yeah, that is correct. You know, it's interesting. I mean, Natalie, when you and I were at school, I remember I was actually just in South Africa visiting, and Natalie and I caught up, and we were talking about it was the Interact Club.
Yes,
is that
yes.
What we did? Yeah. You know, and it was the opportunity at the time, I think, to kind of get involved in social action, looking at injustices. You know, we were coming out of the apartheid era, you know, and how can we think about impacting change? But I don't recall an early age, and maybe, you know, obviously things may have changed, but this idea of how do we give responsibly? How do we think about philanthropy? How do we really critically analyze how our money gets allocated to organizations so it does affect change? How do we think about with an organization that we have to fund infrastructure? How do we think about funding programs? And I don't remember that was necessarily something that we learned about. My early recollections in South Africa and even in Australia, which is very similar, mainly because half the South Africans are in Australia, is that, you know, this idea of philanthropy was very much skewed to, you know, sitting in shul on Yom Kippur and putting that pin in that little card. And that was my recollection about what philanthropy was. And this is, this program is more than that. It is really taking philanthropy to the next level and really critically analyzing how money can really do significant good in the world. And also when it can't, you know, when giving money can be damaging, and how do you avoid those situations?
So let me put some context to this discussion. We're talking to Wayne Green, who's the CEO of the Jewish Teen Funders Network, and he's based in New York, and we're talking about funding, basically getting kids involved at a teenage level, or I suppose during school period, to not during school. I suppose they'd be happy to do this and not go to school, but during the school years, to get involved in some sort of philanthropic exercise and to teach them about chesed and about giving. So I just want to give some context. So the Hebrew Order of David is an international brotherhood. We have lodges all around the world. We don't have, unfortunately, in New York. So maybe, Wayne, there's a quid pro quo. You set up a lodge in New York, and we'll set up a funding network in Johannesburg.
We certainly can keep talking.
so the essence of what I'm saying is that we are very well placed to be involved in this type of thing, which is what we do, you know, every day of our lives. We're a completely giving organization. We work within the communities where we have lodges. And I want to just take that one step further. Last night we had, I'm not sure if you would be familiar with the personality, Professor Nick Benedell from Gibbs. That's the Gordon Institute of Business Science. And he was talking about South Africa, the future. And aside, he wasn't able to predict whether the Springboks will win on Saturday, but he of course, he's hoping along with the rest of us. But from a point of view of the context of South Africa, where, you know, this year 1 million children will come through the matric system, and maybe 10 or 20% of them will ultimately find jobs. Now that must be a huge place in which to begin something like this at any level. So, I mean, there are opportunities here, and the professor actually made the point that, you know, it's up to each individual to be involved. And I suppose, where do you start? Do you start with the kids? Is that the way to educate them, bring them into the process of what we do? Because, you know, older people tend to get involved in this. I think young people are concentrating when they leave school. They're concentrating on education. They're then concentrating on building a life for themselves and, you know, earning money and please God a home and, you know, the 1.5 kids, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if they're well grounded and they understand the philosophy of giving, that might be a good start. So I think there is some synergy which we could talk about.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. I think, you know, as, you know, really the first big moment that I think kids really come into money is around the bar mitzvah age. When teens have their b'nai mitzvah and they get presents and money, you know, how are we teaching, you know, it is such a pivotal moment for kids and that learning capability. And how are we teaching them at that pivotal age about what is the commitment that we have, that when we have and when we receive, what do we give? And you know, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say, but I, you know, when I got my bar mitzvah money, I think I put it straight to the bank.
You didn't head for the nearest toy store? You didn't go to the nearest toy store?
I mean, I bought a lot of Lego at the time. but most of it went into the bank, and there was no sense or even understanding about the need and the commitment that we have and responsibility for tikkun olam and tzedakah and how we can give. You know, and I think we're, as an organization, are exploring, you know, how do we really kind of educate parents and schools and teachers to start to have this critical conversation with, and rabbis and synagogues, how do we have this conversation with teens at this age? And I think it's certainly happening, certainly more than when I was bar mitzvah age. And, you know, we as an entity are building networks and providing curriculum and training to professionals so that they are skilled to be able to have these conversations and opportunities with bar mitzvah age kids and a lot with the teenage years.
Can you share a little bit about the curriculum? What does that look like? What does it encompass?
Sure. So that's a great question, Natalie. So actually we're in a month's time are going to be launching our new curriculum, which is about how do we really think about philanthropy. You know, we've got what we're calling this new philanthropy compass, which is about what are the core values that we have as Jews to give, and then what are the mitzvot, what are the actions that drive us and are prescribed to us about what we do in the world. And then the next layering of that is, you know, what are the justice issues? And there's so many, but we've selected, you know, around about 20 of them, which are the primary ones that teens can really start to think about. And it's this really interesting compass that aligns the values with the mitzvot, with the social justice, so that we can see a clear path about how we actually want to think about addressing these from a Jewish perspective. And the curriculum also outlines very clearly about how to run the different sessions. There's different pathways in the curriculum that if you want to run a program over a whole academic year and you want to run, you know, 10 sessions with a number of hours, there's pathways for that. If you want to run a small program of 4 sessions, there's a way that you can do that. And it's very clearly articulates different starting program activities, different issues that you need to address about how do we think about whether we fund Jewish or non-Jewish institutions, how to create mission statements for the group, how to think about requests for proposals, and how do the teens create that and send it out to organizations. So the curriculum is very extensive, with the adaptability to ensure that it's use is available in a camp, whether it's a synagogue that wants to do it or whether a school wants to incorporate it into their school curriculum as part of Jewish studies or whatever it is, they may be able to utilize that. And Hebrew school, I mean, I know that a lot of kids don't go to day schools anymore and because the cost is prohibitive, but there are opportunities to go to a day school in a Hebrew school and do some other work. And so there's an opportunity for this program to be used in that space. I know New York is nowhere near South Africa, but in December, we're actually going to be running our first pilot of the training for facilitators in using this new curriculum. And it would be incredible for us to have a South African come and participate with us in December here in New York learn about this
what
program.
What skill set does one need to be a facilitator?
So really the main thing is the ability for them to be able to connect with teens and someone who's working in the space of teen engagement, whether that's a teen educator at a synagogue or whether it's a teacher at a school or whether it's someone who's running programming at camps. You know, how do we think about building up our skill set to empower teens through this process? And so the training is about learning the content of the program, having the tools and the materials, as well as how to build up your skills as becoming an excellent facilitator. So the training that we're providing is a marriage of those two components that we're really excited about offering.
Are you engaging with schools and shuls like on a person-to-person? In other words, you go to the rabbi and say, we want to put this program into your shul. And kind of, if you are, what is the response? Because I found generally what happens is this, particularly in South Africa, I'm not sure what it's like, they're really engaging in this type of activity. I mean, surely youth groups in the shuls, are active. That must be a part that they're looking after the youth as much as possible because that's their future membership.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when we are doing the programming, you know, we often do go out and present to, you know, consortium of rabbis, or we may talk to day schools where they coming together. There's a program, there's an organization here called Foundation for Jewish Camp, which brings together a number of camps, you know, to do leadership and training. And so we often go and present to these different entities to talk about philanthropy and how they can think about building in these programs within their existing institutions. And so it's a lot about us sort of going out and showcasing the work that we're doing, similar to, you know, this conversation we're having today. And hopefully someone then hears about us and then approaches us and says, hey, we're really interested in learning more about this. I have staff, it's a small team, but I have a staff member here who does one-on-one consultations. We have the ability primarily around the U.S. to do some travel when we go to conferences and then to work with those 10 foundation board incubator communities. But we certainly provide the consultation to organizations to help them to start a teen philanthropy program. You know, we haven't charged for curriculum in the past. The training does cost, but we have a range of resources available online, which are all about, how to create a mission statement, how to build consensus in your programming. And so we bring these professionals also together once a year for a big summit, once every 2 years for a big summit. Next year, we've got some smaller learning labs, which people come from all different parts of the U.S. and North America to participate in. And in fact, we had a really large summit this year in San Francisco. We had representation from Switzerland. We had people from China actually coming out to do learning with us. Obviously, participants from Australia, North America, and Canada.
So let's take a hypothetical situation. The Hebrew Order of David in South Africa decides we want to make a start doing something like that. We like to engage with the youth. We want to try to see how we could advance something. What would be the first step? What would we need? What resources would we need? What would you offer us? And what would we need to put into such a program?
Sure. I guess, the big thing that when people ask us about exactly this issue is, is there a facilitator that can take the lead on this program? Is there someone there who can be employed, or whether there's someone ready in existing employment that has the ability to take on this type of program? We would provide all the necessary curriculum. As I said, we've got the training. We would offer someone to come and participate in the training here. If they were not able to, we would provide all the curriculum, and we do one-on-one consultations over the phone. We use Zoom, Skype all the time to connect with our peers throughout North America to provide this information. And so it is about having the person in the institution being able to, take on, learn the materials, and then also then, what's the ability to advertise and bring in teens to participate in the program.
Therein lies the rub. So there's two parts to this. I think you started out by saying, is there a facilitator? Or are there facilitators here? And I'm sure there are people who understand kids, mm-hmm. number one, and number two, understand the dynamic of what's needed here in the philanthropic scene. And I'm sure that on the other side of it, there's the resources but attracting people, attracting them into a program such as this. What's the hook? I mean, what's the advantage for me as I'm a teenage kid, and you can tell me, listen, I'm a young lad, and I heard these chicks coming there, and this could be great for me to pitch up.
It sounds like what phenomenal life skills, and to be offered an opportunity as a youngster to be mentored through learning how to set up a business, a mentorship program, a mission statement, think about budgeting.
I don't know. Natalie, I'm thinking myself as a teenager, and my hormones are running rampant. And am I really thinking about helping the community? What's going to hook me in?
I think it's a generational gap that actually
the young kids today.
Post-millennials.
Young kids today, man, has problems.
Post-millennials are social activists, actually. That there really is a different way of seeing and being in the world.
No, I do hear that the world is changing. I mean, I appreciate that, but I don't think the teenager is any different today than he was in my day about 3-4 years ago.
That's debatable.
But maybe there was a very large study that was just that's been released here in the U.S. and they had about 18,000 teens, which I think is one of the largest studies of Jewish teens. And there were some very clear markers, and one of those big ones was about that teens today are really committed to thinking about how they can impact the world and where is their space to make those changes. And so I think the teens have already got that hook, and they're looking to see where is the spaces that they can do that. Now,
they want to get involved in this. There's another side which I just want to throw into the mix. Today, people are living probably 30-40% longer than they would, which is another problem. So now they're going to start off doing all the serious stuff you know, early in life, and they're going to have such a long life ahead of them. Is this the time to be pulling them in?
Although definitions of teenagehood have changed. In fact, according to many neuroscientists, people remain teenagers until they're 24, until the prefrontal cortex has actually developed.
I know some 75-year-old teenagers.
Still teenagers. Can you give us examples of some of the work that the teenagers have done? Can you give us a sense of some of the projects?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that I was in Houston. That's one of the other communities in the Foundation Board Incubator. You know, and they were really learning about, you know, the teens there. It was their first year, and they decided that as teens, they want to see about how can they support other teens in the Texas Houston area. And I remember going to a session where they were learning about that. I don't know if it's, you know, don't quote me on this. I don't know if it's Houston or whether it was Texas, but it's one of the areas that has the largest trafficking of children in the country. You know, and that was extremely surprising for me as well as the teens learning about it. And so they then were really learning about what are the different nonprofits in the area that is actually trying to address this particular issue. And so they then had an opportunity to do site visits to these organizations and then to actually allocate funds out to them. Now the teens may, you know, raise, or they have a granting pool of say $10,000, $20,000 or even less. And then they select, and there might be two organizations that they want to fund equally, or they may give $1,000 to one and $9,000 to another. You know, it's really up to the teens about what they do. But going and doing these site visits and actually learning firsthand exactly and seeing what is happening in their local area is critical to them being connected to their community. Often it's going to Jewish organizations, and that really stimulates that connection to Jewish life outside of the bubble that the teens are often engaged in. And I think that's really critical to how teens start to get a wider view about what the Jewish community looks like, what the world looks like, and how they can advance issues as they start to move through different cycles of being teenager, of being a young adult, and an adult. You know, and Stan, I think, you know, you mentioned, is this, you know, we live for so long. I think the ability for us to give should be at every single stage of life. And I wish that I had some of this knowledge when I was much younger. You know, and, you know, kids today are thirsty for this information. I even was back in Australia a year and a half ago, and my nephew, who was five, you know, I had some money, and I said, we went out to meet with an organization, and we spoke about the ability for us to give. And I asked him, where does he think the money should go? And his response was, I think they all are important. And so we allocated the money evenly, you know, and I think it's so important that we're giving these lessons to teenagers today, because they're going to be the leaders today and tomorrow. And how are we instilling these critical skills and values and leadership and Jewish identity building into what they land up doing at a future stage?
And there's going to be a vacancy in the White House after today's vote. they're not short of leaders. I mean, they're short of leaders in the U.S. We're talking to Wayne Green. He's the CEO of the Jewish Teen Funders Network. And I also have with me in the studio Natalie Solomon. She's a psychologist and a doctor, Nochal, and pretty to boot.
Let's take you back to philanthropy.
Hold on a second. And my name is Stan Claff. I'm from the Hebrew Order of David International. And we are an international organization, and our principal focus is on chesed, on charity, on raising funds for this type of purpose. We'd like to start people young in the organization, and it's a thought. And by the way, you're talking about Houston. We do have a very strong lodge in Houston, which we started also, and another one in Dallas, which are thriving and doing work, good work in the community. So possibly there's an opportunity to connect with them as well. So yes, we're talking about bringing kids into the modern day and to think more about giving and to think more about the Jewish way of life and how important it is. Just taking that one step further, do you think people are not associated with Judaism, they're more in a secular way, would they be attracted, would this be an opportunity for shuls to use to bring people closer to the religion and stop the drift?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. I think, you know, growing up as a kid in South Africa and then moving to Australia, you know, the communities there are sort of heavily swayed towards a more modern Orthodox mentality. And here, certainly in the U.S., the spectrum of Judaism is so diverse and so dynamic and such a colorful display of different people. And I think that one of the pieces about social responsibility, tikkun olam, philanthropy, is that it's another way for us to engage in Judaism. You know, some people engage by doing rituals and lighting Shabbat candles, which incidentally, actually, a lot of people do regardless of their affiliation. But I think that the ability for us to think about tikkun olam and some of these social responsibility pieces is it contributes to how we think about who we are as Jews, and it aligns to our values. I mean, it strengthens our commitment to be involved in the Jewish community. You know, we had a study that was done recently, again, through the Foundation Board Incubator, that showed that teens who'd participated in this program had a very strong Jewish identity and values from being a participant in the program. And when they moved off to college away from home, whilst they may have reduced in their, like, ritual behavior, they were still very active and engaged in Jewish life. And I think that's because when we think about Judaism, it's not just about the rituals. There's so many other incredible components about what makes up being Jewish today. And I think this is one of those pieces that organizations are seeking to try and bring people back into being active participants in community.
So we stand against anti-Semitism, and of course we stand against assimilation. We want people to affiliate, and I think that is a way, by doing Jewish, that you can in some way fight anti-Semitism by showing the world what you can do. And also, you can, if you think Jewish and you do Jewish, perhaps you're less likely to move away from the faith and move away from the Jewish, from your Jewishness. So maybe there is an opportunity and something which needs to start at a very young age. I suppose parents take their kids to shul, and that's where they start. So this taking the place of the parent taking the kid to shul, just put him into the funding network, and you're home and dry.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because some of the teens that participate in the program come from blended families. So one parent may be Jewish, one not. And here, you know, it's not just about, you know, if the mother's Jewish, you're Jewish. If the father's Jewish, you consider Jewish, and in a way. And there is where there's the opportunity to really work with this young kid who's coming into this program because they identify as Jewish because of the background of one of their parents. You know, and this is an incredible opportunity that we have to really work with the teen to really celebrate and show pride and excitement in what it means to be Jewish and how they can continue to be an active participant within the faith and in their community. And so we're excited that this program really attracts a number of teens, and it isn't sort of targeted at one particular definition of what it means to be Jewish.
So it's not exclusionary?
No.
Can I ask you, in terms of philanthropy, does that always have to be tied to money?
No, I think that's the other thing that we talk about. You know, philanthropy, you know, our program, the Jewish Teen Funders Network, our program is focused on philanthropy as giving money. But I think that as part of the program, we discuss the ability that people can give time, they can do volunteering. You know, there's so many different ways that we can give, and it's about what people feel aligns to what is meaningful for them. Sometimes they don't want to, or they don't have the time to go out and do a day of volunteering. But this is a way that they can actually still affect change by giving financially.
What are some of the ways that the kids do raise funds? Is it raffles?
Bingo evenings. Tin cup on the corner.
Yeah. I think the programs sort of steer away from the bake sales and the lemonade stands that we see in the movies. the program is really encouraging teens to start to build up their skills. And so the teens learn about, like, how to make an effective ask. You know, if you're addressing an issue that's really you're passionate about, if it's, you know, let's say domestic violence, and your collective group is working to address domestic violence in the local community, you know, how are you going to articulate that to your parents? How are you going to talk to your family? We use online social media. We use different platforms that the teens then use. They sign up, they create profiles, and then they're sending out very sophisticated emails and conversations to different people to raise the funds. So whilst they may still do the occasional, like, you know, movie night or something like that, which raises a bit of money, they really are going out and asking people in the way that adults do. And so this is very much how we're respecting teens and the ability that they have to learn and participate in this program as adults. And so this is the way that they go about it. Some programs are really lucky, or I don't want to say lucky, but some of them are fortunate, where there's often a donor who says, right, I'm going to give $10,000 to the granting pool. And so that sits in the pool, and then the teens raise extra money on top of it, so that when they get to the end point of being able to allocate money out, they have a significant larger pool of funds that they can then think about how they distribute out.
So there's two sides to the charity aspect of the one part of it, or philanthropy. The one part of it is giving, but there's the other part of it where very few people have the ability or even the enthusiasm to go and ask for money. So asking is something that's much more difficult than giving. And I think if you can instill that in people, I think that you've gone a long way towards, because if you can ask, you can give you at the same time. So I think personally, it's much more difficult to ask for money than it is to give.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I ask all the time for money.
So do I.
And it's not an easy job sometimes, but you know, it is about, you know, how do we, you know, when you make the ask, you know, how are you really, these teens, how are they articulating the ask? How are they really demonstrating their Jewish values? I was on a site visit in Seattle at the end of their academic program, and I was absolutely blown away by these kids who were at an organization who were so passionate and committed and proud to be Jewish, and articulated who they from, you know, where they from. They're from this Jewish foundation board in Seattle, that they raise funds, and they want to see about how they can impact the world. And I was so proud to see these young kids standing up for injustices, standing up for their Jewish identity, and really representing us in a way that I think is so powerful and goes a long way to fighting anti-Semitism, and for people to see in the wider context about who we are as a people and what we're trying to do to address issues in the world.
So we're coming to the end, unfortunately, of the program. It's amazing how when you're in the studio, the time just flies.
I know. I can't believe it. I was thinking that we're going to have enough to say, but I feel like there's still more to go.
Absolutely. We could talk the whole night. One announcement, the Hebrew Order of David International in Johannesburg is hosting a morning on the 14th of November. It's from 9:30 for 10. And we're having Lee Noodleman, who sings Yiddish songs. She has a whole story about her background, and she's also a pretty lady to boot. And she's going to be entertaining. And with these people, you know, anyone who wants to, you know, of an age who wants to come, there's no charge. There's tea and coffee, and there's, you know, she'll entertain us. And really, she's something worthwhile listening. She's appeared at Limud. She's appeared at different venues, but she's also very keen to come and give these older or the elderly in the community an opportunity. It's held at the HRD Center. There's ample seating. You don't have to book and you don't have to pay. Just come along and enjoy the morning. Wayne, we're running towards the end of the evening.
So how do people get hold of you?
Yes. So what I was going to say is give your organization a punt. Tell us what you're about, where you are, and
thank you. I was actually
information.
Going to do that, but thanks, Natalie, for prompting me. You can reach me. You're welcome to email me. It's really easy. It's wayne@jtfn.org. Go to our website, which is www.jtfn.org. We have our training that's coming up in December. We would absolutely be delighted to have a South African or two or three participate. We would love to talk to organizations in South Africa, to local funders who may be interested in supporting this type of program being incubated in South Africa. And I would love to hear from you. So please, you know, don't feel shy, send me an email, jump on our website. You know, Natalie's got a lot of information too about the work that we do, so you can speak to her and she can connect us.
And you can contact the HRD, which is 011-640-3017, or you can email admin@hrdava.org. We'll also connect you. It's and you've got the details of when it'll be put up on the website at High FM, right? Tabu, and I'm bullying him to doing some work.
Very good.
And Wayne, it's been an absolute pleasure. I will be talking to you in the days to come, and maybe there's some synergy, and maybe there's something we could do. If you want to send me a ticket to come to that that training session, I'm only too happy to go. My bags are always
sure. Listen, I know the exchange rate's not so good. No, we do have some scholarships available. So, you know, if there is financial constraints, reach out to us. I don't know if it's going to be you, Stan. Maybe Natalie wants to come up. We're happy to have Natalie
yes, now
come
this
over.
Is, the feminism comes out.
Yeah, but it was always lovely speaking to you, and thanks for your insights.
Nice
They've
to
been
speak
fantastic.
To you.
And thank you. And before I wish everybody, as I usually do, good Shabbos, I want to wish the Booker a healthy win. You know, this is the Anglo Boer War number 3, so we're gonna hopefully we're gonna win on Saturday. And if you do go to shul, please go to shul. Don't let the rabbi tell you that you should watch the game. But if you feel like recording it, I'm sure you'll be it. But really, and thank you for coming on the show, and good Shabbos, and thank you everybody in the studio.
Good Shabbos. Thank you so much.